looking at customers' faces when they're eating, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's enjoying that. Like, she's loving that. I can tell. Like, how good's that? That's the greatest sense of achievement now. Yeah.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Over the last decade or so, it was commonly believed that large restaurant groups were the only way to make money. But many have come to realize that margin is king, not turnover. It's given rise to small bespoke offerings and the formation of small restaurant groups dishing up specialized intimate offerings. Have the rules on hospitality venues changed, and will we see a new model of the ideal restaurant? Scott McComas-Williams is the executive chef and director of the Love Tilly Group in Sydney. Scott, how are you?
Good, thanks, Hark. How are you going?
Good. You're a busy person. There's now five venues in the group and you have various roles with them. Well, what's this year been like for you? The group has expanded quite dramatically.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy, as you can imagine. The last 2 years have been pretty hectic. Since opening Rigati late 2019 and then into 2020 with all the craziness, we were able to create a new business out of that, and then we've gone and done something silly and opened another one late this year, so just to keep us busy.
Well, it's very positive reaction to turbulent times. Rigati, as you just mentioned, was open just before the pandemic, but Fabrica was a different model for what you had previously been used to. What was it like putting that together?
Look, it was pretty fun. It was interesting, eye-opening, because none of us had a background in retail or wholesale. It was basically born out of necessity. So when... you know, we got told we had to close our restaurant, which had only been open for 6 months. And I'd only been a business owner for that time. Pretty stressful time knowing that you had a lot of staff that depended on working in your venue. And so basically we got shut down on the Sunday, and by the Monday I had a bootleg prototype for what became the Fabrica Pasta Packs. It was pretty crazy looking back at it, actually. Yeah.
You've got to be built a name for yourself as a pretty dab hand with pasta. But what was it like creating those packs for retail? Did you have to treat it differently?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not going to be the same product that you get when you come in to dine at Rigati, but they're still amazing. It's still great handmade pasta. It's obviously extruded. It's not rolled by hand. We couldn't produce that much pasta if we were doing it all by hand. But so it's still a beautiful, handmade product, essentially. Mm.
Take us back to when you were young. What sort of role did food play for you in your family?
It was big, yeah. Mum was a really good home cook. I spent quite a bit of time in the kitchen with her, mucking around, and, you know, I was always watching cooking shows, and people would give me cookbooks for my birthdays and Christmases. Extended family as well. All the old daggy Aussie TV chefs and stuff, you know, all the Hueys and the likes. You know, it was great. You know, it was part of my childhood. As I got older, I would cook the family meals, the Sunday dinners and stuff. It was good. It was good fun.
Take us back to then. What sort of, is there a meal that you remember cooking, or what sort of food were you cooking for those Sunday meals?
I did used to make a bit of pasta. I think I got into paella from a cookbook that a good family friend Sid Weddle gave me. What else was it? Yeah, a lot of roast beef and roast lamb and stuff like that, slow roasting stuff. old hearty food.
Do you remember your first day in a commercial kitchen? Is there any stories from that time that you can share?
Yeah, well, I had a funny start because I actually, even though all that love of cooking, obviously when I was a kid, I went to uni because I was back in the, I guess, I went to good school and you get good grades and then you go to university, you don't go to TAFE, and just because that's what you did. And then I dropped out doing, I did arts for a couple of years, didn't go to much class, dropped out after a couple of years, and then did go to TAFE for a little bit again, but I got Frank Kimura's number from Sid Weddle, who I was working for at The Essential Ingredient. He owns The Essential Ingredient, and he basically said, if you want to cook, you need to go to a good kitchen. And he said, here's a list of names. It was like Andrew O'Connell, Matt Wilkinson, Shannon Bennett, and Frank Kimura's name was on there as well. And I said, oh, can I have his number? Because, that Spanish cookbook you gave me for my 21st birthday, that, or whatever it was. I think it might have been a younger one than that. But I was like, yeah, I want his number. So he put in a good word for me, and then I cold called him, and yeah, he put me on three doubles in a row, as was standard trial back in the day, I guess. So now they trial you, 2 hours max, and you still gotta pay them. But no, you pay me. But it's but yeah, I was on the mixed olive section, for. Yeah, and putting the tomato on the bread for the pan catalan, that was my duties for my first duties. I was like a fish out of water there. That was pretty mental.
Mavita had a pretty incredible impact on the culinary landscape of Melbourne and Australia. What was it like in that kitchen?
Oh yeah, it was amazing. So I started at Mavita Arcade, the one in Bourke Street, the big one. The big boy. And I had Frank was obviously there, and Jimmy Campbell, who was the head chef, Matt Chimanchis, was one of the sous, I think, and Ewan Crawford as well. So I had all these absolute guns, and then like Adrian Clemens, who's come back to run that restaurant again. It was like, yeah, it's crazy thinking back, like how many great people went through there and stayed as well. I stayed with the group for 7 years, and some of the, yeah, and then a lot of these guys did long service leave, like Robbo from Original. He's still there. Chicken as well. He was there for a long time too. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, it's great time.
What did you take from that experience?
Well, obviously the love of Spanish food. Frank had a huge influence on me. He did a lot for my, I guess the way I see food and the way I taste food and the way I look at things. I went, you know, I did, I was with him in Melbourne for, what was it, 3 years, and then I moved to Sydney to open Mavita Sydney as the sous chef. And I ended up taking over as head chef there eventually. But in the meantime, he let me go on a, well, for want of a better word, a sabbatical, I guess. And I got to go over and live in Spain for a bit and stage at a few different joints here and there, and sort of I being able to see, like, because I'd learned it, he taught me all this. He taught me about all these dishes, but going and actually seeing them being made in the flesh, and then you kind of understand where, oh, that's where that comes from. That's why they do this. That's, it was quite, it was quite fascinating. It was awesome, and wouldn't, I'll thank him forever for that.
Do you have any stories of the experiences you had over there or some of the dishes that spoke of that time?
Yeah, I mean, just getting off the plane and walking into Madrid and not going anywhere in particular or necessarily recommended, but just the first joint we walked into, my wife, Sophie, well, not wife now, but at the time, not at the time, but we just rocked into some little joint and ordered a couple of canyas of beer and some morcilla and some bocadillo de calamares, some prawns, razor clams, and it's just like, oh wow, yeah, I got it, I get it, yeah. And that was just it, and that was nowhere fancy at all.
You did many things before opening your first restaurant, Ragazzi. What were some of the key moments in your career leading up to that?
Well, I guess I wouldn't have ever thought of pasta. I always just, had this love for Spanish food. So Movida Sydney closed in 2016. Which is pretty gutting. We were meant to move to another site in the city, but that fell through, and that Holt Street site wasn't perfect for it. The boys Frank and Andy made a decision to close it, and so I, being in that area, had made a good relationship with Andrew Chibbe from 121 and. Vinny and Berta as well, obviously, but 121 and Vinny were next door, so that's why the we'd had a few vessels post service here and there, and he talked me into jumping over to the Italian side. And well, first I worked in all of his venues, just, I guess, moonlighting around there. And then I helped him open Bucco in the city, working with him was the first time I'd really made pasta in any professional sense. And I kind of fell in love with that product. Just the potential of how many different things you can do with it and how many different shapes there are and why you serve this sauce with this shape and why that doesn't work together. And, shape comes before sauce. Just all these different things and different flours and different eggs and no egg and using an extruder for the first time, I had, no idea. And Dan Johnson actually was there helping me out at the start there. So he taught me a lot about the extruder because I didn't even know how to turn the bastard on, to be honest. so that was good. And that's when my love of pasta, and that was a full trap style venue with Anti, Primi, Secondi, Dolce, which I think is a great way to eat, but I just looked at that and thought maybe you don't need the full fanfare. Maybe you can just do a pasta. Maybe you can just open a pasta bar.
What was the transition like for you as a chef, having sort of really immersed yourself in Spanish cuisine and moving to Italian? Were there challenges?
I guess just mastering the pasta, and also, I guess, at the start, working with Chibs, not being able to do Monte Mar, which is surf and turf, because that's a big no-no in Italy, but, that's every dish in Spain. And I've managed to bring back a fair few Catalan influences to the Ragazzi venue since the start, to be honest. In all fairness, a lot of my base sources are probably lend themselves a bit better to the Spanish style of cooking than necessarily Italian. But you've got to have a keen eye to notice, I reckon.
Ragazzi was your first foray as a co-owner of an establishment. Tell us about how that came about.
So I've known Matt and Nate for a while. I met Nate when I first moved to Sydney back in 2012 because I was working with his wife at Ovita Sydney. She was waiting there. And then, you know, so we just, and so I met, you know, I eventually met Matt through him, and we kind of just, you know, were mates for a while. And then in 2018, Soph and I were in Hong Kong, and we just happened to bump into Nate there, who was over there for his mate's 30th. And we ended up spending quite a bit of time. And then one of the, you know, one of those late night nights out, and you start talking about businesses and if we should do something together. And the original concept was a tapas bar. We're like, cool, let's get back to Sydney and actually talk about this. And we did, but then I kind of just curveballed them both and said, actually, no, it's actually a pasta bar, guys. And here's why. And because I just wanted to, you go to a ramen bar and just have a bowl of noodles, but you go to Italian, you have to have a pasta and a protein. Like, why can't you just have a place that's accessible and you can just have a glass of wine in a bowl, or you can have a full, you can have a bunch of snacks. You can have two bowls of pasta. They're not, you got options, but I didn't think there was any need to have the whole kit and caboodle. Like, I think we could do an amazing product that's a finished product that was just, at the end of the day, just pasta. And then, you know, we were looking around Redfern actually, because I thought it was more of a suburby thing. And then Nate found the old Angel Cafe in the CBD in Angel Place. And I was like, this is behind my ex-boss's joint. And we took it anyway. And then it turned out to be a ripping move because it's a sick site. I love it. Yeah.
It's a hidden away little establishment. You wouldn't know about it unless you knew about it. What's it been like operating such a small venue with such a limited specialized offering?
Well, I guess that was the concept was always going to be that. We kind of, as I'm sure you, as you alluded to earlier, we kind of only know small venues. We don't know a lot, you know, we probably wouldn't have the skill set to do something big. So this was really in our wheelhouse. And as far as the limited offering, I think, like, just as you say, if you don't know about it, you're not going to go there. But once you do know, and that's what you're going to get, and that's what you're prepared to, that's why you're going for lunch, because you want to go for a bowl of pasta. You're not going there saying, oh, guys got any steaks or anything, there's a couple of steak joints around the corner that people could jump into. So I think I think probably early days might've been a little bit like, you can't turn over for the pizza menu. This is what we do, just pasta. I think once people sort of got to know us, and you know, I guess it's pretty much booked out all the time now, so that people obviously have heard of us. And so I think they, once they know what to expect, it's not an issue.
Well, Ragazzi was one of the last restaurants that I reviewed as a critic, and it was quite an extraordinary meal. The pastas particularly. Tell us about some of the pastas and what it takes to deliver a great pasta dish.
Yeah, I remember that. Haku was actually my favourite review. Thank you, mate. I was at the pub when I read it, so maybe that helped. back when we used to close on Sundays. So I guess like having a balance of long pastas, short pastas, egg pastas, semolina pastas, filled pastas, baked even as well, as long as you've got a balance of all those meat, veg, seafood. I think you did have probably would have had the cavatelli back then. It's pretty early days, wasn't it? Cavatelli with a pork and fennel sausage, which we make in-house. Well, we make it fabric in now. Back then, well, I used to break down a pig in that little bar. That was just, I don't know what I was thinking, mate. Everyone looked at me like I was crazy. What are you doing, mate? With pork sausage and pippies. With the cavatelli, the little hand-rolled cavatelli, that was another thing that, at the time we were like, how are we going to keep up with this? They're, every single piece has been rolled on a little gnocchi board by hand. I think that was my favourite dish. It's probably still is one of my favourite pastas. The ravioli would have been back then, asparagus, I guess, pecorino. That's a hand rolled again. What else? Geez, you just testing my memory there, Huck. I've written a few menus since then.
tell us about what it takes to create a great pasta dish.
You come up with the shape and the sauce. You can't just, they got to work together. If you want to do a shape, then you'll have to come up with a sauce to match that, and vice versa. If someone's got such and such produce, then we can work around that. We can say, okay, what sauce can we make with that? What shape will go with that? Scallops are in season in the winter, for example, and some truffle. We can do a good price on scallops. Let's do a fagatini because we can, make a stuffed pasta, make a nice little scallop fast and then stuff it inside that. That's a classic, one of our favourites that we do. There's some wonderful Cavallonero that's been coming out of Moonacres Farm. So Alex Major, who's the head chef there, who, will make a nice green sauce and use it with a cavatelli, a shape that's, designed for those, that loves those sort of veggie-based sauces that can catch all the bits. I haven't really answered your question there, mate. the pasta and the sauce has to match, and it needs to be balanced. I think a lot of people... See, to me, I probably don't cook it. Our pastas probably aren't exactly how an Italian would dig it. We do sauce it harder than – we do sauce it for an Aussie palate. So, when you go into, Rome, if you can remember that far back, to like Roscioli, and you get that, the carbonara or the cacio pepe, and it's just coated. It's just perfect. It's just, it's just on there, and it comes out – screaming hot straight away, and you've got to eat that straight away. You can't let that sit because it just ends up being dry. We kind of cook our pasta, make our sauces more for the Aussie palate with a bit of extra, a little bit wetter than they might like. That makes more sense to me. A bit saucy. Needs to have acid. A lot of butter goes into pasta to emulsify at the end. And needs to have acid, which I think a lot of people probably forget. So we have a wonderful pantry of different vinegars that we finish off the different pastas with at Ragazzi, which is probably, most of them are Spanish too. Because, Spanish vinegar, I can't get away from that. I have to have that. I have to have a bunch of them.
Since joining Love Tilly Group, it's your role has changed exponentially from being a chef and co-owner to the multiple venues. Well, what's the average day for you like now?
Right now I'm at La Salut 5 days a week, doing the services, just because new venue, got to be there, obviously, and I like being there. And then I'll try and spend the mornings getting around, probably more, to be honest, more in front of the computer than in the kitchens. And then Tuesdays, I'll try and do, so it's, at the moment it's 6 days, but, you know, I'll probably get back to 5 days sooner rather than later, and just doing, so just basically bouncing from venue to venue, catching up with people. I mean, we've got some amazing chefs in the group. We got Alex, as I mentioned before, at Rigatti, Simon at Dear St. Eloise, and Tom at Love Tilly's writing the menu now. And then, so that was like, I don't really go around. I don't want to be like that sort of exec chef that has to have his finger in every dish, you know. These guys are wonderful chefs. They kind of use me as, you know, I like them to just use me when they need to. And we kind of just spend time and bounce ideas, and, you know, I give them ideas and they'll come back with stuff, as opposed to sort of like me trying to push stuff on them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're spending a lot of your time at Bar Salute at the moment because it's just opened. Tell us a bit about it and what you love about it.
Well, as I said, like Nate and I were, you know, we always wanted to do a tapas bar or something Spanish anyway, because there hadn't been there's not a lot of the offering in Sydney. There's a hell of a lot of pasta, not a lot of Spanish food. And, you know, that was always our plan, to do something like that. And, yeah, I kind of wanted to do something a little bit more Catalan, because that's where I spent most of my time when I was in Spain, working in Barcelona and around there and tapas bars. So, yeah, I wanted to do something to sort of show how good the vermouth scene is and how good the Spanish wine scene is at the moment, and you know, how good tapas really is when it's, you know, when that word's not abused. Because we all know that word, but I think we haven't seen too many examples of actual tapas in Sydney.
Can you give us some examples of great tapas?
Just any anchovy on a vessel is just one of the best things you'll ever eat, and that's why we have, you know, an anchovy dish at every venue. Always Cantabrian. Just a tortilla, a slice of tortilla, a perfect wedge of cooked, just an onion and potato. Like I do them on the weekends at La Salute just for the lunches, and gee, it's good. I hadn't made one in so long. You know, Frank taught me how to do them. It's just a little slice, I call it a pincho of tortilla, and I think that's one of the most classics. The calamari sandwich is probably one of the most famous, though, in Madrid. And Frank obviously does an amazing one of them. Down at Arquay, we used to do, I shudder to think how much calamari we used to clean up down there. My hands were black, and I think I have like an allergy to it now because I did so much of it. I used to have to wash my hands with salt after every day, because it was like, they were just black. I was like, you know, you can buy this stuff clean, Frank. He's like, no, you can't. Sorry. I think you can, mate.
you fell in love with cooking at a young age. What is it that you love about what you do?
Probably like cooking was actually being in the kitchen was like for so many years, like, just amazing. Like I just loved it. And, you know, and then moved on to like running the pass, and that was just like such a wonderful sense of achievement. Like, you know, I'm in charge of this kitchen team, and how good's that? And then writing menus, which is what I've been doing for the last the last few years. That's probably my favorite thing to do, really, menu development. And to be honest, now it's just looking at customers' faces when they're eating, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's fucking enjoying that. Like, she's loving that. I can tell. Like, how good's that? You know, I used to hate wondering what the customers were thinking and stuff. And now it's like, that's probably to me, and people coming up to you after lunch or dinner and saying, thank you so much, that was awesome, can't wait to come back again. I think that for me is like, I think that for me is just the best. Yeah, that's the greatest, sense of achievement now. Yeah.
The group has grown pretty amazingly in the last couple of years. What are you looking forward to in 2022?
Not opening a venue. that was our New Year's resolution last year, though. So, and look how well we did there. But I think trying to get back into the office a bit more, and not so many late night services probably would be pretty good. Spending a bit more time with the family. I've got a 1-year-old, Ned, and with my wife, Sophie, would be that'd be pretty good. Trying to just consolidate a little bit and not go too hard next year. I don't think I've got any concepts left at the moment anyway. So there's only so much, right?
Well, Scott, it's an absolute pleasure to catch up with you today. Congratulations on the success that you've had in troubling times, and look forward to catching up again. Please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, Ark. Appreciate it a lot. Cheers.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.